Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, I tell you what, Jesse Ramos, Americans for Prosperity Montana, joining us here at the United States Capitol with our live show from Washington, D.C. Jesse, just look at everything we've gotten to see and do and people we've gotten to talk to in the last 24 hours. There is no way we're going to be able to cover it all here in this statewide show. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just been nonstop go, go, go since yesterday, from the vice president, Stephen Miller's wife, to Senator Dayne, Senator Sheehy. We've got Senator Risch coming in here in a little bit, but it's just been fascinating. What so many things that are going on, from shutdown to energy policy, permitting reform, so many things that affect Montana. It's so great that we can be here bringing this to the Montana listeners.
Yeah, we may have Idaho U.S. Senator Jim Risch joining us here any minute. We just caught up with Senator Steve Daines. I'll share some audio from earlier that we had with a conversation with Senator Steve Daines during Montana Coffee. And then we'll also share some highlights of our conversation with Senator Tim Sheehy as well. And then we got some more fresh content for you coming up here this hour of the program. Also, so stand by with us here. But yeah, he mentioned Vice President J.D. Vance. So yesterday afternoon, Jesse and I, we were like, hey, let's stop by Senator Dane's office, say hi before the big show from his office here this morning. And we ended up getting to tag along with his staff and go meet Senator Daines over near the Mansfield Room at the Capitol, and that's where we ran into Vice President J.D. Vance.
So we talk about that, we talk about strategies for moving those five votes, and we're just going to keep working at it. The people deserve an open government, so we're going to keep on trying to do it. Well, the troops get paid on Friday, yes. We believe that we can continue to pay the troops on Friday. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to pay everybody because we've been handed a very bad hand by the Democrats. This is one of the reasons why you've seen some layoffs in the federal workforce. We do think that we can continue paying the troops, at least for now. We've got food stamp benefits that are set to run out in a week. We're trying to keep as much open as possible. We just need the Democrats to actually help us out.
All right, so there you go. That is, you can hear some reporters yelling out towards Vice President J.D. Vance. But yeah, we were just within feet of him as he stepped out of the Mansfield Room. He was actually in the weekly luncheon with all of the Republican U.S. senators. Both Senator Daines and Sheehy were there. And we caught up with Senator Steve Daines right after that. And one of the things, in fact, this got picked up by the New York Times. The New York Times was listening in as I was chatting with Senator Daines yesterday. And Senator Daines said this: he got an earful about beef. We'll talk about that and much more coming up with Montana Talks live from the U.S. Capitol right after this.
If you securing America,
breaking the tyranny of fuel, that's the aim of an army program looking to go nuclear to fuel bases across the globe. It's called the Janus program and looks to install commercial microreactors by 2028 in remote or contested locations where it might be difficult to bring in traditional fuel. Jeff Waksman, the Army official leading the effort, tells Fox News Digital that great power conflict is defined by who can move their resources around, calling it an immense challenge in terms of providing 24/7 power. Military bases right now are powered entirely by fossil fuels, and that it's not possible with current technology to provide 24/7 power with solar, wind, and batteries. The initiative will be led by the Department of the Army and partner with the Defense Innovation Unit and Department of Energy's National Laboratories. The plan stems from an executive order signed by President Trump earlier this year. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I feel when we're typically doing these, it's 6 a.m. your time back in Montana, of course, 8 a.m. here in Washington. But to have you here live, I'm broadcasting from Montana Coffee. We're doing it here in my office. We're going to have Montana showing up here about 8:15. Should be a good morning.
Yeah, I saw some Montanans are already showing up, coming here to have coffee with
everybody. Well, they know a good deal. Free coffee and free donuts, so never pass that
I've up. Got a cup in hand myself here as well. But, yeah, this was so cool. So Jesse Ramos and I, we were just cruising around the Capitol yesterday. We thought, hey, let's stop into Senator Dane's office, say hi. We run into your team. They're like, well, we're just about to go see the senator. He's at lunch with Vice President J.D. Vance and all the Republican senators. So we tag along. We got a chance to run into Vice President J.D. Vance and then catch up with you. And what a meeting that was yesterday.
You know, we meet as Republican senators every Tuesday. We get together. It's kind of our locker room huddle meeting. It's lunch. And we meet in the Mansfield Room, Aaron, which, of course, is the room just off the floor of the U.S. Senate. It's the largest meeting room. It's the kind of the most prestigious meeting room. And whoever's in majority control of the U.S. Senate has basically first rights on occupying that room for meetings. And so now that we're back in majority, thank God, we meet there. But of course, you got a big painting there of Mike Mansfield, was the longest serving majority leader in the history of the United States Senate until McConnell just surpassed that here a couple years ago. But it's a proud Montana room. We had a great lunch with J.D. Vance. He's always so accessible. Of course, he was one of us here. Just a year ago, J.D. was just one of the guys coming to lunch. Now he's the Vice President of the United States. We're very proud of him.
The thing that got picked up by the New York Times, you and I were chatting just very quickly, and you were telling me about how he got an earful about beef, not just from you, but other beef states, not just yes. Montana.
Look, this Argentinian beef issue, you know, something that affects cattle producers all across the country. We have to remember that while we have 3 million cows and a million people in Montana, cattle producers are coast to coast. In fact, you got states like Mississippi. Cindy Hyde Smith, one of my Republican colleagues, they've got a sale barn there in their place. They're cattle producers. And you just watch what's happening. You're seeing these limit low days we're having right now in the cattle prices. We're staying in close contact with some of our great cow guys like Joe Goggins and other ranchers across Montana. But we were not afraid to make sure the voice of our ranchers was heard loud and clear to J.D. Vance yesterday. We registered this loud and clear to President Trump last week, to Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, as well as to the President's staff, Susie Wiles, his chief of staff. I've been texting literally overnight. The President is over in Asia, as we know. In fact, I just got done texting David Perdue, who's the U.S. ambassador to China, former U.S. senator, very close friend of mine. And I said, David, let's make sure we bring up beef to the Chinese, because the Chinese have shut off the beef market to U.S. producers here following this trade dispute we've had since March.
But it was you and President Trump that first got China open to U.S. beef in the first place, back in the first Trump administration. Senator Steve Daines, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick pause here with our live broadcast, but we'll keep the conversation going here. So, Kate, you can mute us. We'll keep the conversation going here during the break here. Take advantage of every second we've got here. And we just had a great conversation with Senator Steve Daines during the break. I'll share with you later, talking more about beef and cattle herds and more. Senator Steve Daines, you know, the other thing that stood out yesterday, you know, while you guys were talking beef in the Senate luncheon, it sounds like Chuck Schumer was feeling the heat in his Democrat luncheon.
I think Schumer was having the question, where's the beef? His colleagues. So we'll wait and see if this fever starts to break on the shutdown. But we are hearing that there's some cracks developing in the Democrats' coalition. Look, if the truth be told, the Senate Democrats aren't big fans of Chuck Schumer. He rules kind of with an iron fist. He's running for his political life right now with AOC. I mean, can you imagine, Aaron? You wake up in the morning and think about AOC. I mean, what a miserable way to live.
Let's pause it right there if we can, Caden. Yeah, Caden, thank you very much. Let's pause it. We got a chance to catch up with Senator Steve Daines earlier during Montana Coffee. He just walked in, just threw on the microphone headset here, Idaho Senator, former governor as well, Idaho Senator Jim Risch. Senator, great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You know, you've got following in North Idaho to a degree, and it's always nice to visit with my North Idaho friends.
Hey, it is. It's incredible, especially through KJJR in Kalispell. Yeah, a lot of people listening on the live stream out of there. And, yeah.
Well, we got such a great delegation here. I mean, with Tim and Steve, they're really, really good. Close to being one of the best in the Senate, almost as good as the best delegation in the Senate. they're great. They do a great job representing Montana, and love working with them.
What an opportunity we've got right now for Idaho, for Montana, to make our timber industry great again, for making mining in America great again.
Yeah, really, really true. My undergrad was in forest management, and so I spend a lot of time on those issues. Obviously, we love our public lands in Idaho, just like Montana does. I think Tim and Steve and Mike and I all joined hands closely when there was a move to try to sell off public lands when they had when they were looking for some money. What it really did was underscore how Idahoans feel about their public lands. And I talked with Tim and Steve also. They got the same reaction from their constituents. I mean, our phones just lit up. Our emails lit up. That was just a really bad idea. We love our public lands. They're part of our heart and soul.
Well, especially right now during hunting season.
Absolutely. I mean, which is where we should be, right?
Yeah. That's why my flight's later today.
Good for you.
I got football playoffs to go to. I got hunting trips to do. But you guys keep getting the job done back here, if you don't mind.
Well, we're not getting the job done. That's the problem, of course. And I think Steve probably outlined for you where we are. I mean, this is just stupid. The first thing you have to do is govern. And right now, that's not happening.
All right. Hold that thought. Got to take a quick hard break here on Montana Talks live from the Capitol. Big thanks to Americans for Prosperity Montana for making this whole coverage possible today. Back in just a sec.
This is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
We ask a bunch of questions on our Fox News survey. Twice this year, we've asked about the performance of Democrats and Republicans in Congress. Both times, congressional Republicans received more positive marks than congressional Democrats. In March, approval of Republicans was higher by 13 percentage points. In September, they did better by 5. What makes the difference is counterintuitive. You might think bad ratings from lots of GOP voters are the reason Democratic lawmakers do worse. Instead, it's because a larger share of Republican voters approve of their party's representatives than Democratic voters do of theirs. Last month, self-identified Republicans were more likely to approve than disapprove of GOP lawmakers by a 53-point margin. Yet approval of Dem lawmakers among Democrats was net positive by a much smaller 17-point spread. I'm Dana Blanton, and that's your Poll Parade.
With warning in Montana, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, back to it here with Idaho U.S. Senator Jim Risch. Senator, again, great to have you on the show. The Schumer shutdown sounds like he is really starting to take some heat from some of his fellow Democrats. The public employees unions weighing in against the Democrats' shutdown of government right now. When do you think it'll break? Are they waiting until after the November 4th Kami Mamdani elections and more, or what?
I don't know. They said they were waiting for after the No Kings March, you know, and that didn't materialize. But look, this is a party that is struggling mightily. I mean, they have no plan. They've got no message. They got no leader. Schumer is not the leader of anything. He's at the head of the party, but he can't put together any kind of a coalition to make things happen. It's difficult, and a lot of them are on chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. Committee on the Democrat side, there's three of them sitting on the committee openly running for president. Well, you know what, it turns things into a circus at times, which is really unfortunate. But look, we'll get through this. The Dems are taking a lot of heat right now. They're going to take a lot of heat this weekend when the SNAP benefits don't go out to people. Look, the SNAP benefits, food stamps, are critically important to a certain segment of our society. I mean, you have single moms with 2, 3, 4 kids. This is how they feed their kids. And without that, it doesn't happen. And you know, it is so simple. We put out a CR, continuing resolution, which says, look, we can't come to an agreement on the budget. Let's just keep things going the way they were. Is that so hard to understand or so hard to agree with? And they say, no, we can't do that unless you meet demand A, demand B, demand. You can't do that. You're negotiating with a terrorist if you do that. And there's no end to that. So we've stuck to our guns and said, look, here it is. Real simple. Keep the government open while we continue to negotiate to get to a place where we can pass a legitimate budget. Other side refuses to do it. Well, they got to take the heat on this. The other thing that we're getting in our office is we have a very robust, as do Steve and Tim, have a robust operation helping constituents who need their services. And one thing that's picking up right now is veterans benefits. Veterans are having real troubles because the Veterans Administration is shut down, at least mostly, and they can't move the cases along the way they should. That's not right. You know, we owe this to our veterans. This whole thing's ridiculous. And as you just pointed out, their best allies are the unions, public employee unions. They don't vote Republican. They vote Democrat. These are their friends. They want help. Yesterday, I think the biggest union in the country said, Democrats, pass this thing. Let's get operating again. So I don't know how long they can hold out, but I guess we'll see.
We've had some incredible conversations here all morning long with our Montana delegation, with House Natural Resources Chairman Westerman, talking permitting reform, timber, mining, so much more. But since you're the chairman, when it comes to foreign relations, gotta get your take on this. And Secretary of State Rubio, last night we got to sit in the very nook where the Abraham Accords were first, put together in the concept, right? And I think about that, like, that was done under the first Trump administration. Biden came in, threw everything in the trash can and caused so much chaos all over the world, right? Give us your take on just everything that a Republican Senate and the Trump foreign policy team is doing, not just for America, but really world peace, frankly.
Right. Well, you know, our strength depends on our military. It is peace through strength, as Ronald Reagan taught us, and we've lived with that. But it isn't just our military alone. It is our alliances around the world. And those help keep us safe. They join us when we have troubles. And the last thing they want to see is a weak United States. You had Joe Biden up there dithering after what he did and the way he pulled out of Afghanistan. I mean, it precipitated all kinds of stuff around the planet, not the least of which was the Ukraine war. Putin took one look at that and said, if this is the United States, I'm going to be all right here. You know, and of course, he invaded. We have a strong president right now. He has some incredible strengths and tools in the toolbox for himself to use internationally. America's back again. We're back as the leader of the free world. You see what happens every time something goes on. Everybody looks to Donald Trump. The world looks to him. They may not like some of the things he does. They may not like him personally, but they know he is the leader of the strongest country on this planet.
They respect him, and that's why he's delivering. Senator Jim Risch, great to see you from the great state of Idaho. Honor to have you on the program.
Appreciate
thanks, and big thanks to Senator Daines for letting us host the show right here in his office. So, great to see you. Thank you so much, Senator. I know you got to run, so we'll get you out right on time here. Jesse Ramos, Americans for Prosperity, Montana. Yeah, so great to get his foreign policy take. But, yeah, you and I have been talking about, making mining in America great again, making our timber industry great again, permitting reform in particular. One thing that we caught up with North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer earlier this morning as well, and he expects some good news coming out of these trade missions for soybeans in particular. That stood out to Kevin Cramer. But, yeah, what stood out to you with these conversations we've had about permitting and so much more?
I mean, it's just so many states that we have so much in common with. I mean, Idaho, we just went to went to Spokane a couple weeks ago for the monster truck rally for our son. And we passed through Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and it was just amazing. We stopped along the way to see so much of the rich logging history that Coeur d'Alene had, and to also see the fact that their forests are so mismanaged right now, not because of any of their doing, but because it's just red tape after red tape, these permits that they'll be under review for 40 years, Aaron. Sometimes 50 years, just because we can't get it through. And so some of the great work that Senator Sheehy's doing with Chairman Bruce Westerman on a Fix Our Forests Act and then on the Speed Act, which I thought was fascinating what Chairman Westerman said, is that essentially applied the same reforms with Fix Our Forests to everything. So mining, energy, coal, any number of other things that Montanans can once again reignite that American dream that they had back in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. thousands when a kid could graduate high school on Friday. He could go to work on a Monday, making more money than his teachers could. He could afford to buy a home. He could afford to buy a new truck. His wife could afford to stay at home and raise the family because the wages for those natural resource jobs in the 90s and 2000s, they're the equivalent to $93,000 today per year. And now we've been replaced with the tourist industry, where in today's dollars, they're $30,000 to $40,000 a year. And you just can't raise a family. You can't experience the American dream. So in addition to the tremendous waste of our natural resources, just since 2001, we've lost over 2 million acres of forest to wildfires. That's 30 billion board feet. That's enough to build 2 million homes gone. We've lost all that, totally wasted. But then again, it's the American dream that's been going up in smoke too.
I was going to say literally going up in smoke. Yep. Literally going up in smoke. All right. Well, we'll hear more from Jesse Ramos here with Americans for Prosperity Montana. First, though, I want to take you back to our conversation with Senator Steve Daines during Montana Coffee earlier this morning. I think our producer Caden will pick up where we left off.
I mean, that's the
all of these
of
public employee unions coming out against the Democrats, calling on the Democrats to end their Schumer shutdown, essentially. I mean, that is a huge deal for the Democrats
now. It really was. And so I think we saw this week a few dominoes start to fall when you see that one of the big federal employee unions come out against Schumer, basically busting the Democrats. It's their shutdown, which is just validating what we've been saying. By the way, there was a CNN poll last night. They were talking about on the air that this is actually moving Republican numbers up in terms of congressional approval amongst independent voters, moving up in our direction as they're seeing through the charade of Chuck Schumer. So I think you saw that first domino fall. You're going to see the air traffic control is now seeing delays. LAX had delays Sunday, DFW on Monday. As you're going to start seeing, as Secretary Duffy, Secretary of Transportation to President Trump, has said, this is going to get worse and worse. So this is also a danger to the flying public. And then I think you'll see just increasingly with SNAP benefits, other things, which the Democrats love, they're going to, I think, start talking in the next few days about trying to find a way to resolve this.
Yeah, that's certainly what it sounded like yesterday. It sounded like what Vice President J.D. Vance said. I actually recorded his remarks while he was doing a little scrum with some folks out there outside the luncheon. I'll play that a little later in the show here as well. But really, you know, one of the things that's nice about being here for Montana Coffee is really, you know, we were here actually in your office. You had an inaugural watch party in here, so all the Montanans gathered in here because it was so cold on Inauguration Day. They moved everything indoors. And so we got to be here for that. And then now we're here several months later. Look at all the success of the Trump administration and what a difference a Republican Senate now makes. I mean, you just got Bill Mercer confirmed to the federal bench in Montana. I can't underscore how important that is to the state of Montana.
You know, Aaron, you go back to this journey we've seen over the course of the last 13, 14 years. Back in 2012, in fact, I see my good friend Senator Kevin Cramer just walked in from North Dakota. Kevin and I got elected to the House together back in 2012. So we were freshmen together. And by the way, no North Dakota jokes here this morning, okay? This is a North Dakota joke free zone this morning, you know, to protect the honor there of the honorable senator from North Dakota.
Well, after they started rocking the Bach and the North Dakota jokes went away, we were like, wait.
They started driving bigger pickups and bigger cars in general there in North Dakota and lower taxes. But back in 2012, we had one statewide elected Republican. It was Denny Rehberg. That was it. Mm. And you know, today, for the first time since 1889, Aaron, since statehood now, we have an all-Republican lineup. But the undertold story of what's happening in the judiciary, these lifetime appointments to the federal bench, could not be happier to see Bill Mercer, a guy I debated in high school. I was a Bozeman Hawk. He was a Billings West Golden Bear. We used to lock horns back in those days on the debate teams. And now to see him as our new federal district judge is a great moment. He'll be a great judge.
Well, you know, we got our friend Jesse Ramos here from AFP Montana. You know, he's a Libby kid. I was just in Libby, interviewed the school superintendent. They used to have 3,000 kids in their schools. Now they only have 1,000 kids in their schools. And it's because of these attacks on mining and timber. But when we talk about making America great again, this is what this is about, is about bringing these mining jobs back, bringing these timber jobs back, so kids like Jesse that graduate from Libby can stay in Libby and have a camper and have a nice house.
Well, Jesse's younger
right there. All right, we're going to hold it right there. Quick break here on Montana Talks. We also got a chance to catch up with Senator Tim Sheehy talking about beef, talking about Argentina. That'll be coming up right after this.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
FFA members from across Montana and the nation are heading to Indianapolis, Indiana this week for the 98th National FFA Convention and Expo. Claire Mernon is president of the Montana FFA Association.
So there's supposed to be 70,000 members that are going to attend this year, and they have so many different opportunities, whether they're competing in CDs or LDEs, which are career development events and leadership development events, or they are just touring around Indianapolis and Indiana, or getting to be involved in our convention and expo. There's amazing general sessions, and there's a huge career exploration convention that allows them to really get to go see all sorts of different colleges and then also different career fields as well.
Mernon, a graduate of Shepherd High School, is attending her fifth National FFA Convention.
I think that my largest takeaway every single year from convention is really that agriculture is so broad across the United States, and getting to learn more about the different perspectives of the agriculture industry across the United States is amazing, and being able to engage with other FFA members, whether it's state officers or it's even other just members, it's so amazing to be able to engage and learn more about different types of agriculture and continue to grow my own leadership skills and learn more about how I will continue to be a leader in the agriculture industry.
That was Montana FFA President Claire Mernon. And I'm Lane Nordlund.
Fox Facts.
It's the seasonal candy you either love to eat or love to hate. The orange, yellow, and white confection we all call candy corn has been around for more than a century. It was first cooked up in the 1880s by a man named George Renninger, and back then it had a different name. It was called chicken feed because corn was considered food for farm animals. Bags of the candy even had a big rooster on the front. The Golitz Candy Company, which later became Jelly Belly, was the first to mass produce it, and that's when those tricolored kernels started showing up every October. These days, Americans buy more than 35 million pounds of candy corn every Halloween season, about 9 billion pieces. Love it or hate it, that's a lot of waxy sugar. And while chocolate and gummies may be more popular, candy corn has carved out its spot as the pumpkin spice latte of Halloween candy. Matt Murphy, Fox News.
Big topics, big ideas, big sky. Montana Talks.
Hey, we were here for President Trump's inauguration day, and now we are back really highlighting several of the successes of the Trump administration and the Republican-controlled Senate. What an honor now, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., Capitol Hill, Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy. Senator Sheehy, great to see you as always, my friend. It's crazy seeing you here in the Capitol because You seem too young to be here. You know, we saw you pop out of the luncheon with Vice President J.D. Vance yesterday, just before VP Vance came out. We saw you, and it's like kind of a surreal moment to be like, wow, one of our fellow veterans is here in the United States Senate. It was a surreal moment, kind of.
Well, as I said in the campaign trail, and I meant it, it's time for a new generation of leaders. And it doesn't mean that many of our senior leaders need to go, but it does mean that especially our generation, the GWAT generation, that joined up and fought during our nation's longest war, who had to get jobs during the great financial crisis, have had to live and grow families through COVID. I mean, we've had some pretty historic times in the last 25 years, and our generation has had to fight through those. And I think it's time for us to have a voice on Capitol Hill, in the halls of power. And as the youngest Republican member of the Senate, it's an honor to be here and be a voice for a generation, especially when we start talking about these really challenging issues like, you know, foreign policy. What are we going to do with our military? How do we rebuild our military? How do we deploy our military? You know, as you and I were both part of our exploratory campaigns around the world post 9/11 and learned that the limits of military power are very real. There's things we can and should do with our military, and there's things we should not be doing with our military. So I think our voice is so important that it's heard at this point in time.
When you look at what Secretary Hegseth is doing, Secretary of War Hegseth, and what President Trump is doing on the foreign policy front, big picture, what do you see happening?
America first. America first does not mean America alone or America only, but it does mean America first. And when you really boil that down, it's just common sense. Just like a parent does what's best for their children, takes care of their children. A parent may love all children, care about all children in the world, but at the end of the day, we're worried about our kids first. We're worried about our household first. If you're CEO of a company, you're worried about your company first. So it's not unrealistic and unreasonable to expect that our elected leaders need to worry about what's best for America first. So what our foreign policy is rearranging around is we're still standing with our allies. We're still standing with Australia, with the AUKUS agreement was just reaffirmed. I was with the Prime Minister of Australia last week and the President, and we've reaffirmed our alliance with Australia and how important it is in INDOPACOM. The President's in, you know, Asia as we speak, seeing our allies. So we're with our allies, but it also means that we are focused on what's best for our country.
About 30 seconds before the break, you just had Montana Coffee right in Senator Gaines' office right next to the conference room we're broadcasting from right now. Who'd you see across Montana?
Well, we had some great 4-H kids in from Belgrade. It was wonderful to see them. They're here doing a bit of a government education this week. Some homeschool kids, which is a homeschool dad myself. I have my kids here during the shutdown because we're kind of stuck here. So I've got my kids in town giving some constitutional education. Of course, we had some folks here from our Montana churches as well. So it's always great to see Montanans in D.C. meeting the delegation.
Beef markets. Let's start with the cattle industry and much more because, of course, Senator Tim Sheehy, not only a Navy SEAL veteran, but you've also got the Little Bell Cattle Company. In fact, I just saw somebody with a Little Bell Cattle Company ball cap on yesterday. And, of course, you. But you just had this big ag summit last week. I mean, this was a huge deal, the Common Ground Summit. But, you know, you've been focused on these types of issues long before you ever even thought about running for office. And so the big picture when we talk about beef is how do we rebuild the cattle herds in the United States of America? How do we also lower the price for the consumer without undermining the effort to rebuild the herds in America?
You hit the nail on the head. And you know, ag is a complicated subject. You know, to the average American outside looking in, ag's simple, you know. What's ag to the average American? I'm going to go to the grocery store and I can grab anything I want off the shelf. Avocado, banana, flour, fresh beef, fresh whatever it is. It's all available at the fingertips. And for most Americans, you know, they just have this perception that, oh, these things just pop out of a warehouse somewhere, you know, and just arrive on my shelf and I can get any piece of produce I want year-round in all 50 states, which is very rare. This is like the last 60 years we've had that luxury. It has not been that long that human beings get it, any food they want year-round wherever they want it. And America is pretty unique in that regard. But the bottom line is food security is national security. And one of our greatest, most quiet superpowers we've ever had is the most powerful nation in the history of mankind is our ability to feed ourselves. And not just feed ourselves, but also feed the rest of the world. And you look at every other empire in history that has met its end, they all met their end when they had to import food from other places. When Rome had to import food, when the British living on a tiny island had to import food, had to import resources. The Japanese, you know, which led obviously to World War II. Time and again, we've had empires who have not been able to feed themselves. And although America's not an empire, we are the most powerful nation in history. And our ability to feed ourselves has been a key underpinning structural component of that. We've been very short-sighted in allowing our food industry and agriculture to be offshored, as we have with manufacturing for the last 30 years. And the low beef prices that for 25, 30 years have harmed our ranchers, and the crop prices, which have also recently especially been nosediving, are harming our ag community in very negative ways. Now, lately, beef has rebounded, and that's very good for our ranchers. We want it to be that way. Now, there's concern on the consumer side. We want beef prices down. The truth is, beef prices have been too low for a long time, and they've been harming our ranchers. Now, the price at the store is not what ranchers are getting. When the cow-calf operator sells his cattle, on the hoof, puts them on the truck, and he gets a check for that, that's not equivalent to what, for example, just yesterday, cattle prices dropped 50 cents a head. It says 50 cents a pound, yet box beef prices went up $3. So inverse correlation there. What does that mean? That means more margin for the packers. So we've had an over-consolidated meat pack industry. 83% of meats in the U.S. are packaged by four companies, three of which are foreign-owned. We've surrendered control of a lot of our meat supply in this nation to foreign countries and foreign-owned corporations. So we had a fantastic summit last week. Joe Goggins of Billings was kind of the chair of it, put together a great group. All 50 states were represented. And the purpose of the summit, we had Secretary Rawlins there for a couple of hours. We had six senators, handful of House members. And the point was, ranchers are an individualistic bunch. Typically, you can't get them in a room to agree on much, and they want to mind their own herd. They want to take care of themselves. They don't want the government to help. But it's important I believe, at this inflection point for American agriculture, especially multi-generation agriculture, that their issues are heard in D.C. Every other industry is here every single day, all day, lobbying for what's good for their industry. The ranching industry has not been. So it's important to have them here and have their concerns heard about tax incentives for families to hold on to their ranching operations, not sell them. Tax incentives for how they can buy equipment and grow their operations. Regulatory policies like grazing rights that were severely infringed during the Biden administration to make sure that grazing rights are respected and expanded. And, of course, our foreign imports of foreign countries' beef, which is has always been a structural component of our market, but we have to balance that to make sure that as we rebuild the American herd, ranchers aren't going to reinvest in growing their herds if we don't incentivize them to. If they're more incentivized to sell their ranch land and cash out than they are to invest in their business, then we can't expect them to regrow their herds. So it was very important at this point, this turning point in American ag, that we had some of the biggest producers in America, not packers, but the cow-calf operators, the growers, the feeders in the room saying, I want to stay in the ag business. I want my kids to inherit the ag business. But we need to see these changes if we're going to do that.
Yeah, and how we get more meat processing done locally. Exactly. That's something you've been a big part of, like I say, even long before you ever even thought of running for office. A couple of minutes to go here with U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy as we broadcast live from Capitol Hill. The Fix Our Forests Act, we're going to talk about that in a little more detail here with Chairman Westerman coming in from the House side here a little bit later this hour. But this is a topic you are leading on. You're also an aerial firefighter. You've been leading on as a freshman senator, actually getting legislation across the finish line.
I'm the first and only freshman to actually get a bill passed into law so far. And actually, we've had a couple passed now. And I'm so proud of that because in this one, FOFA, the Fix Our Forest Act, is really a landmark piece of legislation. This will go down in history like the Great American Outdoors Act did. This piece of legislation is bipartisan from the very beginning. Alex Padilla, myself, John Curtis, John Hickenlooper. Understanding that our forests and our public lands have been mismanaged for far too long. Our federal agencies have not been responsive to the will of people. Most importantly, the will of local residents who live around these lands, the industries that are there, our logging industries, our grazers, realizing that, yes, public lands are for recreation, no question. Yes, they're for hunting and angling and hiking and backpacking and all that. They're also for production agriculture to feed our nation. They're also to get timber to build our homes. They're also to mine and get the critical rare earths that we're buying from China right now. So common sense management and, most importantly, wildfire fighting.
Yeah, all right. Well, Senator Tim Sheehy, great to see you as always. We'll catch up later on down the road when we got more time, but it's so great to see all the Montanans here from Montana Coffee and catch up with our delegation. Great. All right. So it looks like, let's see here, we got to run into the next break. We're going to power through the next break and then continue our live coverage here from Capitol Hill. Speaking of powering through, man, if you need a little energy right now, and maybe you need a little pain relief at the same time, let me tell you about Power Plus Pain Aid. That's what it is, Power Plus Pain Aid. Yeah, actually, I was right here in this very room. This is really cool. So when President Trump's inauguration took place, we were all indoors because they canceled the outdoor portion, right? So we were sitting in Senator Dane's conference room watching the inaugural coverage, and that's where I met Lee Ettinger, a Marine Corps veteran from Big Fork. And that's where he first started telling me about his product. He said, hey, you're a veteran. You know, you get those aches and pains, but you also want some energy for your workout or your long drive. And now I've tried his product. You can, too. Go to drinkpowerplus.com, drinkpowerplus.com. Use the code FLINT15, get 15% off your order. My Pillow.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, now I'm plugging in reminders for the show calendar for tomorrow, maybe Friday, and maybe even next week. We have got so many conversations to feature for you, for our statewide audience here, because we've been chatting with folks all morning long. Jesse Ramos and I caught up with people here on Capitol Hill yesterday. You heard a little bit when we ran into Vice President J.D. Vance yesterday. Jesse Ramos, one thing, you got to share this with our listeners here. And again, big thanks to Americans for Prosperity Montana, AFP Montana, for making all this coverage happen. You know, I had the honor of doing over 105 events with the AFP Montana crew last year, and what a crew they've got. So big thanks to Americans for Prosperity for sponsoring today's Montana Talks program. They believe in bottom-up solutions and policies that put people, not politics, first. It's about empowering individuals, not growing government. Jesse, I've mentioned this a few times. You're a Libby kid. You're fighting for your other Libby kids out there in getting, you know, making mining in America great again, making our timber industry great again. Talk about copper, because you spoke at this Montana Energy Conference recently, and this stat that you shared, I mean, even some political operatives here in D.C., like, their jaws dropped when you shared this Montana stat.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. When I was doing research for this speech, I couldn't even believe it. So there's a Montanore project in northwest Montana. The permitting we've been waiting on since 1982. So over 40 years we've been waiting for the permit on this. And beneath those mountains lies over 100 billion pounds of copper. That is enough to rebuild our entire grid twice in the entire country. It's enough to build a transmission line from Montana to D.C. and back 500 times. It is unbelievable amounts of copper. And then 200 million pounds of silver also is beneath those hills, enough to power every smartphone in the world for decades to build it. And it's just sitting there. Same with these logging projects that we see, like 2 million homes worth of timber has gone up in smoke because the permitting takes so long. And it was an honor to talk to Chair Westerman, the author of the Speed Act, that's going to fix all that.
Yeah. Well, you brought along another great guest with us here. In fact, I got a chance to meet her in Whitefish earlier this summer when the Western Congressional Caucus was taking place. Kelly Merkel is the Director for Federal Government Affairs for AFP. Kelly, how long do you think this shutdown is going to go? And what? And then what next after that, right?
Yes, all the really good questions. Thanks for having me, guys. I've had a great morning watching and listening to you guys talk to so many members and cover so many topics. It's really been informative and fun, so I'm glad to be here to help wrap up. So what do we know about the shutdown? The federal government has been shut down for 29 days, a shutdown on the 1st of October, and we have had crossed a number of what we consider to be kind of like poker tells, is what we say, because at the federal government, it's a little tough to kind of figure out what's going on, right? So we thought first we might not miss the first federal paycheck, but that went by on the 10th, but then we got to the middle of the paycheck, that went by on the 15th. We're starting to see more and more of these indicators that we're in an extended shutdown. Now, could that change at any moment? Absolutely. But what we're seeing and feeling is politics and not policy, which is what some of the members had told you earlier this morning, both Senator Sheehy and Senator Daines had mentioned, that the CR that we are having a conversation about right now is like 24 pages long, if I'm not mistaken, 24, 25 pages. It is a bill that would keep the funding steady at the current levels. It would not increase or decrease any spending or funding for the federal government. And so what you're seeing go on is the United States Senate continue to vote. They've had 12 votes, as was said earlier today, on the CR that would bring back the federal government. So there's a bunch of things you want to keep in mind. Inside this bill, this 24-page bill, is an actual date. It's November 21st. So when the government comes back, when Leader Thune and Schumer come together and we get to 60 votes to pass out of Senate, we then have a narrow window of opportunity in which this has to be addressed again. And this is part of the challenges that the country is facing, that America's for Prosperity is very interested in working through and trying to help fix, is this government by crisis. We go from one date to another date to another. It's unsettling. It's not great for families. It's not great for businesses. It's not great for the running of the federal government, obviously, because there's nothing in statute also, your listeners should know, that says who is essential and who is not. So based on who is in the administration, the essential employees are then determined who will be working and how long the funding is for whatever list of folks that is ultimately. It's never the same group of people. Presidents do it differently. But I think the key phrase is the uncertainty, right? So we're going to get to come out of the shutdown at some point. We're going to get to November 21st. November 21st, we have a handful of decisions that have to be made. Again, the House has to come back. There has to be a piece of legislation to fund the government. There has to be 218 votes in the House. There have to be 60 votes in the Senate. It has to go to the president's desk. He has to sign a bill that would reopen the government ultimately. But there's a lot of parts in play.
You're right. And ending this governing by crisis. And that's clearly, you know, at least from my perspective, Chuck Schumer is deliberately creating this crisis and trying to block all this progress from taking place because so many good things have been getting done and across the finish line. And it just seems like it's all straight up because of politics and pandering really to this far left base ahead of the New York City elections in particular as well. Kelly Merkel, great to see you. Great to see your team. I love the Freedom Embassy that you guys got here. That is such a great campus. Jesse Ramos, about 20 seconds to go. What do you want to tell folks across Montana? And thanks for helping make all this happen.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. I just want to tell folks that we will get through the shutdown, and then I don't want the shutdown to distract from what really matters, which is unleashing American energy abundance and restoring the American dream across cities and towns in Montana and across the entire country.
Yeah, and like we say, people are always wondering, what can I do? What can we do? Well, get a hold of Jesse and his team. He's got field teams in the Flathead, in Billings, all across the state, and so a great way to get engaged.
AFPMontana.com.
All right. Man, we're going to have more to follow for you tomorrow.